Go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, something you're very familiar with. And we'll just, if you find it with me real quick, I'd like to just read a couple of verses here. We're starting about verse 8, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And we'll read down through about verse 11, maybe 12. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. And watch this fourth word here. And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this cause, the cause they wouldn't receive the truth, God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. I used to wonder about this many years ago when I would read this thought right here, how that after the rapture, those that have heard the gospel and rejected it, the Antichrist would come on the scene. He'd come into the power and his kingdom, his rule. And it said, for this cause God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. One of the big end times signs of the end times is deceivableness. It is deception. Jesus mentioned it four or five times in Matthew 24 when they asked him about the end of the world. And he warned about being deceived. But I wondered, how in the world could the whole world swallow a lie, be so deceived? And we've moved into this corona thing, and we've seen a little shadow, a little taste of how the whole world is being deceived. Now, it's killed some folks. It is a flu bug. There's more than one coronavirus. You notice they got that COVID-19. The 19's got something to do with identifying the different strands, parts, and so forth. We already had a taste of it a long time back in what they call SARS, and that just kind of disappeared. But it was one they were warning about, a pandemic with it. They were warning about the swine flu and all the rest of it. But this one, with an agenda behind it, has gone worldwide, gone quickly, and scared the world to death. And there's a lot of deception in it. Now, what I'm going to do tonight, and I've never done this before, we're taking something off of a off the computer, off the video, and putting it on the screen here for you to look at. The other night, I didn't see it. In fact, our TV's been broke down a few days here, but I didn't see it, but I'd heard that Fox News tried to put on this video from California with a doctor, and YouTube, the platform it was on, dropped it, pulled it off. However, we'd already had a notice of it, and so our brother Jeremiah Morgan was able to save it. Now, it's 50 minutes long. We're not going to show you 50 minutes. He may squeeze in 25 or 30. You're going to have to listen on purpose. But all I want you to do is listen to this doctor, his credentials, who he is, and the mathematics he's going to give you. That's going to be very important, the mathematics. Now, I'll come back and I'll wrap it up with a few remarks here at the end. He's in a big private clinic. He's a 20-year doctor, degree in microbiology. He's going to deal, and he'll tell you over and over, he's just dealing with the facts. Now, he come under a lot of fire for exposing it. Now, I know you folks are so way ahead of me on technology, too. Some of you may have already seen it. Pretend you haven't. Humor me a little bit tonight. And maybe you can see it some more, but pay some things attention, close as you can. When he talks about quarantining healthy people, not sick people, when he talks about the death rate being so small, Listen on purpose. Listen on purpose. And I'm going to go down there and look at it because I've just seen very little of it myself. And especially the math. Now, I know we're live streaming tonight, and I know we're on radio. So some of you folks out there online, you'll have to do the same thing. You'll have to make yourself listen to this. But I've been preaching here now 5 or 6 weeks about this thing. And there's some folks think I've been real bad wrong. I'll take my chances before God that I'm right. Amen. And give him the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, I think this will be a little beneficial to you tonight. And young people, y'all listen on purpose too. And especially to the facts he's going to give, okay?
Really wanted to come together today and kind of just talk about what we've learned over the last couple months here at Accelerated, and really talk about what's happening in Kern County with our testing, what's happening in California with the testing, and kind of an ER physician entrepreneur perspective on what's going on, and kind of what we think the approach should be going forward. And Dr. Masihi and myself have been dealing with this, as you have. I'm sure you guys are working from home, you're sheltering in place, you're isolating yourself, and we want to talk about if that still makes sense. So we want to kind of take everything we've learned and throw it against the backdrop of who we are. You know, we both have had extensive classes in microbiology and biochemistry and immunology. We've studied this for each of us 20 years, and we take everything that we're seeing today and we put that against that backdrop and say, does this make sense? Are we following the science? We keep hearing following the science. What is science essentially? It's the study of the natural world through experiment, through observation. So that's what we're doing. We're studying the disease around us. We're making observations. We're doing testing, experiments to figure out exactly what's going on. And so this has caused some severe disruption for Accelerated, as we have people coming in 7 in the morning till midnight. We're reporting to the health department, we're calling patients back, and at the same time, our volumes have dropped significantly. The hospitals, their ICUs are empty, essentially, and they're shutting down floors, they're furloughing patients, they're furloughing doctors. So the health system has been evacuated in certain places. In New York, the health system is working at maximum capacity. In California, we're really at a minimal capacity, getting rid of our doctors and nurses because we just don't have the volume. The hospitals don't, as I've met with their CEOs twice in the last week, and we don't as well. So we're busy with paperwork for COVID, and we're all focusing on COVID. And so one of the things I'd like to talk about is when I talk to ER physicians around the country, what's happening? Well, because COVID has become the focus, people with heart disease, people with cancer, hypertension, and various things that are critical are choosing not to come in based on fear. So what that's doing is causing the health system to focus on COVID and not focus on a myriad of other things that are critical because we don't have the staff there. And the major component is fear. People are saying, I don't want to go get seen by my doctor. What if I get the COVID? So there is a lot of secondary effects to COVID that aren't being talked about. And so we'd like to kind of look at how we've responded as a nation and why we responded. Our first initial response 2 months ago was a little bit of fear. We decided to shut down travel to and from China. These are good ideas when you don't have any facts. We decided to keep people at home and isolate them. Even though everything we've studied about quarantine, typically you quarantine the sick. When someone has measles, you quarantine them. We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy. where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home. So some of these things, from what we've studied from immunology and microbiology, aren't really meshing with what we know as people of scientific minds that read this stuff every day. So that's kind of how we started. We don't know what's going on. We see this new virus. How should we respond? So we did that initially. And over the last couple months, we've gained a lot of data. Typically in Kern County, for instance, we've tested 5,213 people, and we have 340 positive COVID cases. Well, that's 6.5% of the population, which would indicate that there is a widespread viral infection, similar to flu. We think it's kind of ubiquitous throughout California. We're going to go over those numbers a little bit to kind of help you see how widespread COVID is and see how we should be responding to it based on its prevalence throughout society, or its the existence of the cases that we already know about. So if we look at California, these numbers are from yesterday. We have 33,865 COVID cases out of a total of 280,900 total tested. That's 12% of Californians were positive for COVID. So we don't, as you guys know, the initial models were woefully inaccurate. They predicted millions of cases of death, not of prevalence or incidence, but death. That is not materializing. What is materializing in the state of California is 12% positives. Well, if we have 39.5 million people. If we just take a basic calculation and extrapolate that out, that equates to about 4.7 million cases throughout the state of California, which means this thing is widespread. That's the good news. We've seen 1,227 deaths in the state of California with a possible incidence or prevalence of 4.7 million. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work? So that's California, and that's I also wanted to mention that 96% of people in California who get COVID recover with almost no significant sequelae or no significant continuing medical problems. So those are important statistics for the state of California. 2 months ago, we didn't know this. So I'm going to bring it to light now because we're sharing our own data. This isn't data filtered through someone. This is our own data. We found 6.5%, and then California has found 12%. So the more you test, the more positives you get, the prevalence number goes up, and the death rate stays the same. So it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And as we move through this data, what I want you to see is millions of cases, small amount of death. Millions of cases, small amount of death. And you will see that in every state. And since we're talking about following the science, we're going to follow the statistics and follow the science. So I want to look at New York State. They've been in the news a lot, right? And their numbers are critical. Let's go over their numbers. Cases of COVID as of yesterday, 256,272 cases in New York State, not New York City, New York, the entire state. But they did a total of 649,325 tests. That's 39% of New Yorkers tested positive for COVID-19. That's their ratios. This is public data online. You can all look it up. So in New York, they found 39% positive. So if that's indicative, and they tested 649,000 people, that's a massive test. That's accurate data, 39%. So if they tested the whole state, would we indeed have 7.5 million cases? We don't know. We will never test the entire state. So we extrapolate out. We use the data we have because it's the most accurate we have versus a predictive model that have been nowhere in the ballpark of accurate. So how many deaths do they have? 19,410. Out of 19 million people, which is a 0.1% chance of dying from COVID in the state of New York. And they have a 92% recovery rate. If you are indeed diagnosed with COVID-19, 92% of you will recover. So we're seeing millions of cases, small amount of death. Millions of cases, small amount of death. And the reason I'm making that point is because we're going to compare this to flu. and say, is this significantly different from influenza A and B? And if not, why has our response been what it is? USA, this is a big one for us. 802,590 cases as of yesterday. We've tested over 4 million. If you guys have studied globally what's happening, that's double what any other country. Germany's at 2. I realize their populations are lower, but the fact that we were able to ramp up and do 4 million is pretty impressive, which gives us a 19.6% positive out of those who are tested for COVID-19. So if this is a typical extrapolation, 328 million people times 19.6 is 64 million. That's a significant amount of people with COVID. It's similar to the flu. If you study the numbers in 2017 and 2018, we had 50 to 60 million with the flu. And we had a similar death rate. In the deaths in the United States were 43,545. Similar to the flu of 2017, 2018. We always have between 37 and 60,000 deaths in the United States every single year. No pandemic talk, no shelter in place, no shutting down of businesses, no sending doctors home.
That's from the flu, by the way, just to clarify.
37,000 and 60,000 flu deaths?
37.
Every year, per the CDC. Due to flu.
Okay.
In the United States. Some years, it's even as low as 20,000 some year. In 2017, 2018, it was 45 to 50,000, depending on who you read. And we don't necessarily report all of our flu tests. We do thousands of flu tests every year. We don't report every one because the flu is ubiquitous. And to that note, we have a flu vaccine. How many people even get the flu vaccine? The flu's dangerous. It kills people. So just because you have a vaccine doesn't mean it's going to be everywhere. And it doesn't mean everyone's going to take it, because we see every year that we have a vaccine, and I would say probably 50% of the public doesn't even want it. So just because you have a vaccine, unless you force it on the public, doesn't mean they're going to take it. I want to compare the U.S. to Spain, because Spain is number two in the race for the most cases, which is not a race we want to win. They had 204,178 cases in Spain, 930,000 total tests. So we did 4 million, they did 930,000. They had a 22% of all COVID tests were positive in Spain. 22% of those tested were positive in Spain. Spain has 47 million people. So that equates to about 10 million cases. If we extrapolate the data as we've been doing with every state, gives us about 10 million cases. How many died in Spain? 21,282 out of 47 million. You have a 0.05 chance of dying from COVID as a citizen of Spain, and a 90% chance of recovery from COVID without being on a vent, without being in hospital. I wanted to compare the U.S. to Spain because we have the most amount of cases globally. So I thought that was important. And then when you bring up a system of lockdown, you automatically have to compare it to a system of no lockdown. Sweden and Norway. I'm Norwegian.
Norway has lockdown.
Sweden does not have lockdown. What happened in those two countries? Are they vastly different? Did Sweden have a massive outbreak of cases? Did Norway have nothing? Let's look at the numbers. Sweden. Sweden has 15,322 cases of COVID. They did 74,600 tests, which is 21%, similar to the other countries, 21% of all those tested came up positive for COVID. What's the population of Sweden? About 10.4 million. So if we extrapolate out the data, about 2 million cases of COVID in Sweden. They did a little bit of social distancing. They would wear masks and separate. They went to schools, stores were open. They were almost about their normal daily life with a little bit of social distancing. They had how many deaths? 1,765. California's had 1,220 with isolation. No isolation, 1,765. We have more people. What I'm getting at is millions of cases, very small death. Millions of cases, very small death. This is what we're seeing everywhere. Norway, its next door neighbor. This is where I come from. These are two Scandinavian nations. We can compare them as they are similar. Let's look at the data. Norway, 7,191 cases of COVID. Total COVID tests, 145,279. So they came up with 4.9% of all COVID tests were positive in Norway. Population of Norway, 5.4 million. So if we extrapolate the data as we've been doing, which is the best we can do at this point, they have about 1.3 million cases. Now their deaths as a total number were 182, fairly small, but statistically insignificant from 1,700, you realize. Millions of cases, small amount of deaths. 1,700, 100, these are statistically insignificant. So you have a 0.003 chance of death as a citizen of Norway and a 97% recovery. Their numbers are a little bit better. Does it necessitate shutdown, loss of jobs, destruction of the oil company, furloughing doctors? That's the question I have for you. And I think the answer is going to be increasingly clear as we move through this data. The next thing I wanted to talk about is the effects of COVID-19, the secondary effects. COVID-19 is one aspect of our health sector. What has it caused to have us be involved in social isolation? What has it caused that we are seeing the community respond to? Child molestation is increasing at a severe rate. We could go over multiple cases of children who have been molested due to angry family members who are intoxicated, who are home, who have no paycheck. These things last a lifetime. This isn't about a seasonal flu. These are things that will follow these people and affect them in a negative fashion for their life. And these are secondary effects from COVID. And these are for me talking to ERs, talking to my doctors, and talking to people across the country and finding out what they're seeing. Spousal abuse. We see people coming in here with black eyes and cuts on their face. It's an obvious abusive case. These are things that will affect them for a lifetime, not for a season. Alcoholism, anxiety, depression, suicide. I talked to Donnie Youngblood and various people in the community. I've asked them, how are things going? Suicide is spiking. Education has dropped off. Economic collapse. Medical industry, we're all suffering because our staff isn't here and we have no volume. These are all real things that I'm seeing every day. I don't read about this stuff. I'm seeing it in my clinics. We have clinics from Fresno to San Diego, and these things are spiking in our community. These things will affect people for a lifetime, not for a season. So let's make sure we're clear on that. So we've gone over the secondary effects. We've gone over the statistics. Now I want to compare flu virus. Is this significantly different? And I just got a little bit of data here. So deaths, per the CDC, 24,000 to 62,000 deaths each year. We had about 45 million total cases in 2017 with about 62,000 deaths, or a 0.13 chance of death from flu in the United States. As you know, our other numbers were 0.02. So the lethality of COVID-19 is much less. Now you've got hotbeds of it in New York, but again, we went over the numbers, 0.1% chance of death. Widespread, small amount of deaths. It's similar to flu, as a matter of fact. If we follow the science, as we've been asked to do, I'm following the science. This data is generated by the CDC, World Health Organization. The testing is generated by what we have done here. So we are following the science. Now I want to talk about the immune system. Dr. Masihi used to teach for immunology. We both had years of microbiology, biochemistry, and virology studies. We've made it our life's work to understand this stuff. And here, I'd like to go over some basic things about how the immune system functions so people have a good understanding. The immune system is built by exposure to antigens, viruses, bacteria. When you're a little child crawling on the ground, putting stuff in your mouth, viruses and bacteria come in, you form an antigen antibody complex, you form IgG, IgM. This is how your immune system is built. You don't take a small child, put them in bubble wrap in a room and say, go have a healthy immune system. This is immunology, microbiology 101. This is not something, this is the basis of what we've known for years. So what I'm seeing is when you take human beings and you say, go into your house, clean all your counters, Lysol them down, you're gonna kill 99% of viruses and bacteria, wear a mask, don't go outside. What does that do to our immune system? Our immune system is used to touching. We share bacteria, staphylococcal, streptococcal bacteria, viruses. We develop an immune response daily to this stuff. When you take that away from me, my immune system drops. As I shelter in place, my immune system drops. You keep me there for months, it drops more. And now I'm at home, hand washing vigorously, washing the counters, worried about things that are indeed what I need to survive. Let's follow the science. This is immunology, folks. This is microbiology. This is what we've combined together. We have 40 years of experience in this. This is common sense immunology.
So quarantining and social distancing is worse for us, you're saying?
It decreases your immune system. You can't build an immune system by... If someone has a reduced immune system, you hide them away because they can't build an immune system. If you have a normal functioning immune system, you need interaction. When a child's in a womb, you're in this protected environment. When you come out, you have almost no immune system. You develop that through touching your mouth, touching your eyes, virus, bacteria, immune response, IgG, IgM. This is how you build a strong immune system.
You think people are worrying too much?
Of course they are, but that's from media telling them to. I am telling them sheltering in place decreases your immune system. And then as we all come out of shelter in place with a lower immune system and start trading viruses and bacteria, what do you think is going to happen? Disease is going to spike. And then you've got disease spike amongst a hospital system with furloughed doctors and nurses. This is not the combination we want to set up for a healthy society. It doesn't make any sense.
So let me ask this. So, I mean, in your professional expertise, both of you guys, very, you know, prominent here in the community, why do you think we are taking these measures? Why do you think that, Governor Gavin Newsom, why do you think he's taking these measures to have California being on a strict shutdown right now?
Well, again, as a leader, you listen to the people around you. And they make decisions on different timelines. And so Gavin Newsom has people around him telling him, we think this is the best move for now. And then early on, we told people the truth changes every 2 hours, because it was. As the data moves, as we do our own testing, I'm giving a different answer now than I would have a month ago, because I understand the progression of disease in this area. I also understand the progression of disease elsewhere, because I look at their data. I don't have to live in Manhattan to watch their disease process, to watch how many positives in the community, and to understand how diseases spread. For instance, nobody talks about the fact that coronavirus lives on plastics for 3 days, and we're all sheltering in place. Where'd you get your water bottles from? Costco. Where'd you get that plastic shovel from? Home Depot. Those are fomites and carriers of disease. So you take your family sheltering in place that you think is safe, and you're taking fomites with disease that they've shown that lasts 3 days. Are you really protecting yourself from COVID? Does that make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. And if I swabbed things in your home, I would likely find COVID-19. And so you think you're protected, but you've got fomites coming from, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's. And it's okay for us to be mingling in those situations, but we have to not go to work. It's okay for us to go to Costco, but not to church. Do you see the lack of consistency here? From a microbiological, immunological standpoint, that doesn't make sense. If you're going to isolate people, you need to shut these all down, because that's how the fomites are being transferred. When you go to Del Taco and you get a plastic bag or piece on your burrito from someone not wearing a mask who was just wiping their arm on your thing, do you think you're protected from COVID? When you wear gloves that transfer disease everywhere, those gloves have bacteria all over them. I'm wearing gloves, not helping you. As your mask that you're wearing for days, you touch the outside of it, COVID, and then touch your mouth. This doesn't make any sense. We wear masks in an acute setting to protect us. We're not wearing masks. Why is that? Because we understand microbiology, we understand immunology, and we want strong immune systems. I don't want to hide in my home, develop a weak immune system, and then come out and get disease. We have both been in the ER through swine flu and through bird flu. Did we shut down for those? Were they much less dangerous than COVID? Is the flu less dangerous than COVID? Let's look at the death rates. No, it's not. They're similar in prevalence and in death rate. So we are saying that our response now that we know the facts, it's time to get back to work. It's time to test people. But again, testing gives you a moment in time. Testing tells you, the nasal swab says positive or negative. The blood vial, the tiger top or the finger stick, gives you IgG, IgM. IgG being the long-term immunoglobulin we look at for immunity. But again, it's a moment in time. And when someone, what's interesting to me too is when someone dies in this country right now, they're not talking about the high blood pressure, the diabetes, the stroke. They say, did they die from COVID? We've been to hundreds of autopsies. You don't talk about one thing. You talk about comorbidities. Their vessels were narrowed. Their lungs were a smoker. COVID was part of it. It is not the reason they died, folks. It is one of many reasons. So to be so simplistic to say that's a COVID death because they have COVID, you know how many people die with pneumonia or people that die from flu? With flu, I should say. It's not from flu. Their lungs were compromised by COPD. They had a heart attack 2 years ago. They have a weakened body. We aren't pressured to test for flu. But ER doctors now, my friends that I talk to say, you know, it's interesting. When I'm writing up my death report, I'm being pressured to add COVID. Why is that? Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so. So this is what I'm hearing from physicians I talked to in Wisconsin, New York, and everywhere.
So you think that physicians are being pressured to make the numbers look worse than they are?
They're being pressured to add it to their diagnostic list.
And so where is that pressure coming from, in your opinion?
Well, I'm probably coming from the administration. So their administration is saying,
or the Newsom administration?
It's probably coming from the hospital administration. I didn't ask them specifically, but they said we're being pressured in-house to add COVID to the diagnostic list when we think it has nothing to do with the actual cause of death.
You can't confirm that beyond their report.
The actual cause of death was not COVID, but it's being reported as one of the disease processes and being added to the death list when they died from COPD. They had COVID. COVID didn't kill them. 25 years of tobacco use killed them.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. So I guess my question right off of that is, I know right now what we're discussing isn't really anything new. There's people who've got immune deficiencies who COVID just supplements whatever illness they're dealing with, and that's being contributing to their, you know, to their death. So going back to what I think the theme is here is quarantining and social distancing, is it necessary? So my question is it necessary for, are you saying it's only necessary for some individuals to be quarantining, but for healthy individuals, it's not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, why would you quarantine the healthy? If you're young and healthy, why would you quarantine yourself? It doesn't make any sense. You quarantine the ill. And
don't they say that one of the reasons to do that is because, you know, so many people are asymptomatic, and then they may take it home and spread it
sure.
to someone who is immunocompromised.
Sure.
I mean, isn't that part of the reasoning?
25% of patients who have COVID are asymptomatic, which is why we advocate for widespread testing. In order to open the economy, you have to have widespread testing. That's number one, no question about it. But historically, if you look at biblical times, you look at leprosy, Mycobacterium leprae, which is the bacteria that causes it. They isolated the sick. They didn't isolate everybody else. So isolating the healthy just doesn't make sense, in our opinion.
So you guys think herd immunity is kind of the way to go then?
Absolutely.
I think so.
There's two ways to get rid of a virus, right? Either it burns itself out or herd immunity. For hundreds of years, we relied on herd immunity. Viruses kill people. End of story. The flu kills people. COVID kills people. But for the rest of us, we develop herd immunity. We develop the ability to take this virus in and defeat it. And for the vast majority, 95% of those around the globe, this is true. And when we look at people that have locked down and people that haven't locked down, we have massive data. It is not statistically significant whether you lock down or not. So why are we doing it?
Do you think it's safe for the state to lift the lockdown?
Yes.
Would it be safe for people to be outside right now?
Yes. I'm outside with no mask.
Are the gloves and mask maybe a little bit too much right now? Is that kind of what you're saying? In some sense?
Again, do you want your immune system built or do you want it not built? The building blocks of your immune system is virus and bacteria, end of story. That's how you build it. I had some conclusions, but basically our conclusions are that when I look at the basic tenets that we know of microbiology, and I say, do we need to still shelter in place? Our answer is emphatically no. Do we need businesses to be shut down? Emphatically no. Do we need to test them and get them back to work? Yes, we do. The secondary effects that we went over, the child abuse, alcoholism, loss of revenue, all these are, in our opinion, a significantly more detrimental thing to society than a virus that has proven similar in nature to the seasonal flu we have every year. We also need to put measures in place so economic shutdown like this does not happen again. We want to make sure we understand that quarantining the sick is what we do, not quarantining the healthy. We need to make sure if you're gonna dance on someone's constitutional rights, you better have a good reason. You better have a really good scientific reason and not just theory. We're going to work diligently to find a vaccine. And one of the most important things is we need our hospitals back up. We need our furloughed doctors back. We need our nurses back, because when we lift this thing, we're going to need all hands on deck. I know that the local hospitals have closed two floors. Folks, that's not the situation you want. We're essentially setting ourselves up to have minimal staff, and we're going to have significant disease. That's the wrong combination. So that's kind of the gist of what we wanted to get across today. And I've been working with some of the leaders, and I've talked to, you know, the head of the CDPH. I've gotten their opinion on this, and a lot of the leaders in Sacramento. And we're all in agreement, but we need to have Governor Newsom in agreement with us to lift this ban. I've talked to our local head of the health department, and he's waiting for that. Even though they're in agreement with me, they're waiting for the powers that be to lift, because the data is showing us it's time to lift. So if we don't lift, what is the reason?
Well, amen. Truth is, I said the first sermon after this thing started, there was an agenda behind it. There is. That's common sense you're hearing there from expert with the science degrees and years of experience. When I chose that text a while ago about a strong delusion, the world right now is hurting from a strong delusion. I'll just add this to it. Our enemies, human enemies, and we know the devil's behind it too, but the terrorists are learning from this. They're learning how to attack us with this very thing, and they've learned about our fear and that we're afraid enough to do all these stupid things, and they're going to capitalize on that when they have a chance. That's coming. Spiritually and scripturally, the tribulation period is casting its shadow. I have my hope in the blessed hope, Jesus coming. I'm not going to sit down, though, and pretend I'm fooled by all of it. I'm going to contend for the faith. I'm going to deny the falsehoods. And I'm going to let God have the benefit of the doubt. That's what we've done here as a church. And what are we now, 5 or 6 weeks into it? If I had it to do over with, I'd do nothing different. I'd take the same stand that we're taking tonight. Amen. Okay, let's stand. Brother Hector, choir practice. Got to get ready for Sunday. There is some good light at the end of the tunnel. Some folks in America are getting fed up. Some of them even coming back to church. A few more preachers have been put in jail. But they're going to have to build some really big jails if a lot of them will listen to God's Spirit and obey Him. Amen. Father, may you add your blessing. Help the choir as they practice. Give us a good day Sunday with souls saved. And thank you for those that were saved at the mission. And we thank you in Christ's name. Amen.